Hey friends, it's Rich here from Unseminary, and we're talking to you about Trained Up. It's an online training tool that ministry leaders just like you use to train volunteers, develop leaders, and teach the Bible. Listen, this is an online video course platform. You can either develop your own video course or use one of their pre-built. It really is an incredible tool. They're really, it's made for churches of all sizes. I know you might be thinking, am I large enough of a church to do online video training? The answer is yes. And you might be saying, am I too large of a church? I couldn't use a prepackaged solution like this. Yes, the answer is yes, you should use this. It could either be used by an individual ministry at your church. So let's say you're, you know, the student ministry or your small groups, you could use it within that or for the entire thing. There literally is hundreds of professionally made videos ready to use, or you can plug in your own stuff. This is what I want you to do right now. Before you move any further, I want you to book a demo today or sign up for a 30-day test with a money-back guarantee. You literally have got nothing to lose. Go to trainedup.church. And if you use the discount code UNSEMINARY, you'll get 25% off for the first 3 months. That's trainedup.church.
Welcome to the UNSEMINARY podcast. Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's UNSEMINARY podcast.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to the UNSEMINARY podcast. So glad that you've decided to tune in today. Listen, we know you've got a lot going on. I know I say this a lot, but you've got a lot going on in your church. So it's really our honor, our privilege that you would pop us in your earbuds today, maybe while you're on your way to work or maybe at the gym or something like that. It really is our honor that you would listen to us today and lean in on today's conversation, and I think you're going to be rewarded for it. I've been looking forward to this conversation for quite a while. Today we've got Clay Scroggins from North Point Community Church. You may be familiar with North Point Ministries. They have campuses not only kind of in the Atlantaland area, but then actually they have strategic partners across the country. It's a fantastic church. Clay, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rich. Super grateful and honored, and I have been an admirer of your stuff for a while. So,
oh, appreciate that.
Thrill for me as well.
No, this is great. It's for people that who don't know, you know, why don't you give us a bit of sense of who North Point is? Kind of give, if people were to walk in, the question I've asked, if people were to walk into a campus this weekend, what would they experience? And then tell us about your role there.
Sure. Well, I would say, you know, every church has a unique vision. We all have similar missions. I mean, our mission is to lead people to grow in the relationship with Jesus, similar to, you know, creating fully devoted followers of Jesus or something like that. So that's what most churches are trying to do. Our vision, I feel like, really is fairly unique. We are trying to create a church that unchurched people love. And I do feel like that kind of, it creates the grid through which we think of everything, or we run everything through. I mean, Clearly the church is for church people. That's kind of the heartbeat of any church. That's the design of a church, is for unchurched, is for church people. But we really believe that we can create the kind of atmosphere, the kind of environment, the kind of posture, the kinds of relationships, and structure it in the most simplistic way possible that an unchurched person would be able to find it enjoyable, despite maybe not agreeing with everything or feeling like they believe everything. So that's kind of the uniqueness, hopefully, of our church. That's at least what we're trying to do. And I lead our, we have six Atlanta area churches, as you said. We do have strategic partner churches, which are their own organization, but it's, I guess that's more similar to a franchise model where they partner with us and use a lot of the content and use a lot of the branding, and then, but they're their own organization. We have a lot of those in different parts of the U.S., obviously in Canada. Carrie Newhoff's church is one of our partner churches, and then we've got a few in other parts of the world. But I lead our original campus in Alpharetta. So I essentially took a person's job who took Andy's job. Andy Stanley is our senior leader. So yes. I have grown quite comfortable living in the shadow of Andy Stanley. He cast a large shadow. And he is a fantastic leader. He really is. He's terrific. He's a thought leader, but he's really he's a great organizational leader, and he is a he's been a great great person for me to learn from, for sure. Over the last, I've been a part of North Point for, let's see, almost 20 years.
That's
coming
amazing.
Up on 19 years, yeah. And I've been in the job I'm in for about almost three.
Yeah. So, you know, for people that listen into the podcast, you know, oftentimes at the end of the show, we have this thing called lightning round, and people will say, like, one of the questions is, like, who's a leader you love to spend 15 minutes with? Well, a number of times people say Andy Stanley. And my joke, I need to just confess to you, my joke I often say is, well, everyone would like to spend time with the Pope. You know, of course they would. You know, Andy's an incredible leader. And that's actually a part of what we want to kind of dig into a little bit here today. A lot of people that listen in are executive, you know, pastors or, you know, kind of in that second chair. And I can't imagine anyone better to talk about that leadership. You know, how do you lead in the shadow of someone like Andy? What does that look like? Maybe we just you start with that. How did you end up in this role? What was it that, you know, you found yourself one day trying to help you know Andy and all that move forward?
Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, I working for a strong leader like that has its perks, and I feel like I've learned a ton. I think the hard part is I'll start with maybe the more difficult part is, you know, I bet many people can relate to working for very driven people can be challenging because their expectations are so high. And so he has high standards for himself. I mean, he's very driven, very progress oriented. I mean, really wants things to grow. And, but even more than that, wants us to become better. I mean, is just very driven by progress, which is infectious. I mean, I've really picked that up. I feel like I've become a person that desires more progress in my own personal life and then also professionally. But I mean, part of that can be, if you're not healthy in it, it can become exhausting, or I'm sure it could lead to burnout. So I've really had to learn how to strike a balance between that strong desire for progress and growth and betterment, but also being healthy personally and having margin. And I mean, Andy, he just a couple of weeks ago spoke at Catalyst Conference, very first session, and just led off with, hey, I mean, he said it many times, but the most important thing that you may ever do, the most valuable thing you may ever do is not something you actually do, but it's someone you raise. And I love the line that he used. He said, Jesus called us to, or Jesus promised that he would build his church. He did not promise to raise our children, which is Andy's just, he's just so great about that. I mean, he really desires to be known as a great father and a great husband and not just a great leader. So I feel like that's probably, I mean, if you didn't have that balance, it would be even more difficult, but there really is such a great, there's a great pace that we have. I mean, it's a very driven culture, but it's also a culture that really recognizes the interdependence between home and work. So when I started in student ministry, worked up through kind of the ranks and worked at one of our campuses, moved to North Point. In student ministry, when I was the high school pastor at North Point, I had all three of Andy's kids in our student ministry at the same time. So
no pressure.
No pressure. Exactly. That was probably the make or break it time for me. I mean, that could have ended my career. So fortunately, they're a great family and great parents, and that overcame any challenges with our ministry that anybody had. So that was great. And then I moved into being a campus pastor, and eventually bumped into this topic of how do you lead when you're not in charge, which has been something I've talked about for about the last 2 years now. And man, I have found that it is, even just that statement, how do you lead when you're not in charge? I have learned that it packs a lot of tension. It carries with it a lot of, it connects with people. Cause I think everybody relates to that on some level that, yes, I want to lead, but I don't have enough authority. I don't have the position or the title that I think I need to be able to do what I think I want to do. Mm-hmm. And what do you do when you're in that situation? So that is, and then I wrote a book about it it came out a couple of months ago. And so I have become very acquainted with the distinction between authority and influence. What's the difference between having authority versus having influence? There are great leaders who don't have a big title and have a lot of influence. And then there are leaders that have a lot of title, a lot of authority, and we wouldn't consider them great leaders because they just don't have influence. So the good news about that is you and I can have influence from whatever seat we're in. And if that's true, then we can lead from whatever seat we're in. But it requires us cultivating influence, which is really what the book is all about.
Yeah, fantastic. Why don't we dig into kind of a practical outworking of that? I think everyone who's listening, obviously, there's more people who are following in organizations than are the leader of the organization, right? There are more people who have, there's less people with actual authority than there are people, in the organization. And so what I'd love to do is talk a little bit, dig into maybe the heart of the issue, which hopefully this isn't jumping too far down, what happens, when you're leading with a leader, and like Andy, or as you've just interacted with so many leaders on this topic, when, you disagree with a direction. Right. I'm not talking in the grand scheme, like a moral or sexual issue, but like, I just don't think this is strategically the right way to go. How do you manage that relationship? How is it that you, you leverage the influence you have ultimately when you're not the decision maker, you're not the person who's ultimately going to make the call. How do you lead that through specifically? And then how are you helping and encouraging other people to lead through that situation?
Yeah, that's a great. I'll give you. Here's the freshest paint in my world. I mean, this is so fresh. If you were near me, you could smell the paint. So I'm 37. Andy's 59. So I'm 22 years younger than him, and I'm not quite a digital native. I mean, I feel like there's a very big difference between I can't remember life without the internet versus can. And I can't. I mean, I remember getting my first cell phone. I remember being in college, pulling over to use a payphone. I mean, that's like a thing of the past.
yes.
However, I am. My class in college was the first class to be required to have a computer. Mm. So I am fairly indigenous as a digital native. But I am convinced that the future of the church is going to be much more adept at blending digital and physical. I wrote my dissertation when I did a doctorate at Dallas Seminary on online church. And so I've been thinking about that topic for about the last 5 years of what could a church look like that doesn't require someone to step into a physical building. I was just at Chick-fil-A this week. They're headquartered in Atlanta, the Christian Chicken. And I was down there at a multi-site conference. And one of the comments that somebody at Chick-fil-A made said that we are trying to figure out right now, how can we be less worried about people coming to Chick-fil-A, and how can we be better at bringing Chick-fil-A to people?
Wow.
And I really connected with that statement because I feel like that's the future of the church. I feel like we live in a culture that is me-focused, that I want what I want, when I want, how I want it. It's a highly customizable, urgent, immediate world that we live in. So the church has got to adapt. And I think that bothers a lot of people, particularly sometimes it's an age thing. And sometimes it's not, but certainly for the longest time, we've required people to come to a building. If you want to grow spiritually, you've got to come to a building. And what would it look like for us to create a pathway of engagement in a local church that is highly digital? And so I've been thinking about that conversation for a long time. Well, so of course I've brought it up in numerous meetings and I've gotten very little traction. And then the more and more I started studying it, the more I thought, you know what, I really believe this is the future. So that's been an area where I've had to learn, how do I have influence across other campuses and up to the multitude of bosses that I have to help move our organization in a direction that I think we need to move in. So that would be the most fresh case study for me, is that topic right there.
So then how can you, let's walk through that. When there is, how are you pushing change management towards an area that, you think is the direction to go, but isn't necessarily held by, folks that work for you or that you work for, or folks above you? What does that actually look like for you? How are you able to do that?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I'm trying to do is have the right posture.
Mm-hmm.
So like the posture that you do that with is so important.
It can't be,
I know what's right, everyone else is an idiot. I see the future, everyone else is a dinosaur. It's got to be, I really trust that Andy, he grew up as a pastor's kid. He's very, he lives, eats, and breathes church. I mean, he just knows it in and out. And so I'm very comfortable recognizing that he is an expert in church and that there are things that he knows that I don't know and there are things that he sees that I don't see. And honestly, even this digital invasion or the digital disruption that we're experiencing, this is not new this is not the first time this has ever happened. This happened with the radio. This mm-hmm. happened with television, honestly, for the Apostle Paul. It happened with the pen and the paper, mm-hmm. where he was leading churches, in a sense, through ink and paper. Mm-hmm. And so this is not the first time that a new form of communication has opened up new opportunities. So I've got to go into it with that approach. I feel like that's really important.
That's huge.
I don't know everything. I'm not an expert. This isn't the first time this has happened. And people above me and beside me and below me know things that I don't know. So I feel mm-hmm. like that's very important. Secondly, I feel like you got to be prepared. I've got to become, if I really believe in this, I can't be an amateur. I've got to be as educated as I can. So I'm talking to everybody I know to talk to about this topic, inside mm-hmm. our church, outside of our church. I'm trying to read everything I can read about this. I mean, I've tried to read every book written from the Christian perspective about technology, and I'm trying to read everything outside of our perspective in different industries. You know, the education industry has experienced this. I mean, they've been wrestling with this for years now about, should we do online education? I mean, Liberty University, what they've done with online education is
amazing,
incredible. And mm-hmm. it really is. And it is, you know, I remember when I, 10 years ago, being out at Dallas, at Dallas Seminary, they were still trying to figure out, should we go online or not? And there was a lot of pushback to that. And at the time, they chose not to for a while, and then they finally reluctantly did. But, you know, now we look at that, and it's hardly even a discussion of should an educational institute go online. And now we go, well, you'd be an idiot not to. So trying to understand that, trying to become more of an expert, trying to be able to bring things to the table, I feel like that's been really, really important. I mean, I'm currently reading a book on digital marketing called Account-Based Marketing for Dummies, which I love the for dummies section of the library.
Right.
You know, the first time I saw it, I thought, hey, I feel so dumb, I don't even understand the title. Is there like a for idiots?
Nice.
But I think being prepared is such a key part of this. And then thirdly, not taking the same approach. I think being flexible with the approach I'm taking. You know, at first I'll tell you here, the greatest breakthrough I got on any of this with our organization is mm-hmm. I had printed something off. So I had brought it up in our leadership team meetings. I had brought it up in different conversations with Andy. Mm-hmm. Nothing had really moved.
Mm-hmm.
So about 2 or 3 months ago, though, Andy saw something that I printed on the printer. He brought it to his leadership team meeting, which is like all of our campus pastors, all of our multi-campus directors.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, hey, who printed this? This is really interesting to me. And it was something that I had, and it looked good. I had it designed by someone. I was about to present it to our staff.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you know, that in that moment, you're like, should I say yes or should I say no? I can't. Is he going to say, like, how dare you? Or is he going to say, way to go? I don't know.
We've all been in that.
Yeah, exactly. Raise my hand. I'm like, that's mine, you know. And he goes, this is fantastic. Where, tell me more about this. And I was like, well, we've had some of these conversations. He's like, yeah, okay, but, you know, help me understand it. So he ended up, he asked me to present it to his leadership team that mm-hmm. I'm a part of. And that didn't really go anywhere. Mm-hmm. It ended up getting tabled and nothing really happened. But then this last Tuesday, again, he said, hey, Clay, I know something got bumped from our agenda. Could you present that one more time today? Mm-hmm. And I was able to bring a more robust solution mm-hmm. and not just pointing out a problem, because I had been thinking about it and meeting with people about it for the last several months. And so I felt like we had some incredible breakthrough. And I felt like, I think that if I were going to lay out a simple plan, it would just be, hey, have the right posture, a posture of humility, a posture of curiosity.
Yep.
Be as prepared as you can be. You know, I like the idea that when you go into a meeting, the best idea doesn't usually win the meeting. The most mm-hmm. baked idea usually wins the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Any idea that's spent a little time in the oven, it usually wins. I talked to a guy at Catalyst Conference last week. He's one of the he works on their team, and he said, hey, I heard you say that statement the other day, and I started thinking about it, and so I decided I'm going to put a little thought into the opener for Catalyst, even though that's not really my responsibility. And so mm-hmm. I brought this idea to the meeting, and it ended up winning, and the opener that they did at Catalyst was my idea, because I had put a little thought into it.
Right.
And he said, I think you're right, that it's not the best idea that wins, it's the most baked idea that wins.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
for me, I think that's a huge part. Be as prepared as you can be, and then take different approaches. So
mm-hmm.
That's
great.
Small little plan that I'm trying to work off of.
Yeah, that's fantastic. You know, I know it's just a practical tactic in that, and I know in my world when, you know, leading up particularly or trying to influence the, you know, team I'm on, even just the the practical tactic of slowing down, doing exactly what you did, which is I'm going to get something on paper, not just, hey, I've got this idea, but like, here's some thoughts. Let's put it on paper. Even if it's just a one-page discussion paper, like it doesn't need to be long. A one-page discussion paper that says, hey, here's some key questions. And, you know, the rhetorical tactic of here are some questions I'm asking rather than, you know, hey, here's some thoughts that I think you need to know, engages people, draws them into the conversation rather than, you know, sets it up as a defensive, here's my opinion, what's your opinion on it? Or here's my approach, you know, how do you respond to that? Rather than like, hey, here's a conversation I'm engaged in, would love for you to be a part of that. Well, I love, first of all, I think your book is a gift. I think there are so many people that are listening in, that, like you say, they want to know how to lead. They're trying to figure out how can they be a good steward of the leadership gift they have, but they're not in charge. They're not the person with the right title on their business card. And so give us a sense of, obviously this kind of came out of your thinking in this area and obviously your expertise and your experience in this area. What kind of impact is the book having? And you know, what have you seen as you've been rolling it out, talking to it? How has that been, you know, kind of rippling out from, you know, your writing into other people's lives?
Yep. Well, Rich, I'm sure you've experienced this, but when you learn something, when a light bulb turns on, all of a sudden you start seeing it everywhere. I mean, for me, it was when I turned 16, I was so devastated because my parents gave me a Volvo, which is not what I wanted, you know? And I remember going to bed that night thinking, well, at least it's unique. You know, at least I don't know anyone who drives a Volvo. The next day I'm driving to school and I remember seeing like 10 Volvos on the way to school. And I was like, what's the deal? Like, why am I seeing these everywhere? And the reason why I was seeing them everywhere, they had always been there. I just had never noticed them because I'd never been looking for them. So for me, that's been the greatest thing that's happened in my own life is now that I'm learning this, that, oh my goodness, that I can have influence despite not having all the authority that I think I need to make the decision. Because I can't just decide to change the trajectory of our organization. And what I've learned, even if I was in charge, I couldn't just decide. I mean, part of the myth of leadership is that if you get to be in charge, then you can lead. That's not true either. I was talking to Frank Blake, former CEO of Home Depot, about this same topic. And Frank said, I used to stay, when I became CEO, I just thought, I just am going to write a memo and tell everybody, hey, this is what we're going to do. He said, I would walk down the hall and I'd see the memo in the trash can.
Right.
Like, because you're in charge doesn't mean that you can affect change in an organization any easier than not being in charge. So the key really is cultivating influence. And once you learn it, once you start seeing it everywhere. You start seeing the implications of it everywhere. So that's been the best part, honestly. I didn't write this book because I feel like a leadership expert. Mm-hmm. I didn't write this book because I feel like I have something to say to advise young leaders. No, I wrote this book because this is what I am learning, and I'm genuinely trying to become a better leader so that I can have more influence. Because I really believe God's put it in all of us to make a difference, to have impact, to see progress happen. And the way it happens is through influence. So that, honestly, that has been the best part about this, is I feel like I've become a better leader.
Very cool.
Certainly, you know, hearing the stories of other people saying, oh my goodness, I've started to apply this stuff and it actually works. And it's not, you know, the truth is that it's, you know, the application is where that's where the money's made. I mean, it's not in the ideas, it's in the application of any idea that really makes a difference. So it's been a rewarding process, and it's been really, really exciting to see other people really grab it and use it and feel like they've been helped by it.
Fantastic. Well, I really would strongly encourage people that are listening in to pick it up. Obviously, you can get it at Amazon and where better books are sold. You know, online, it's really easy to find. You know, I know people are looking for ways to how they can, you know, unleash their influence. You know, really, no matter what piece of the puzzle they're, what, you know, seat they're on the bus, this really would be a great resource for you. Great thing, you know, to read through as a team, even, you know, kind of thing that, you know, hey, this could be a great resource for you to wrestle through and talk about, you know, give it to the four people that report to you and say, hey, let's talk about this. Let's use this as a guide for us. Well, we're going to jump into lightning.
Rich,
yep, go ahead.
In regards to that, let me just jump in real quick. There have been a lot of people that have been reading it as a team, which is exciting. Zondervan, I just did an agreement with HarperCollins Christian Publishing, who is going to release it as a small group curriculum to be able to use for teams. It's going to include some teaching segments, a discussion guide. So that's going to release spring of 2018.
Perfect.
So just wanted to put that out there as well.
Yeah, that's perfect. What a great resource, you know, to help. And so now would be a great time, maybe if you're a leader, to read through the book, and then you can anticipate that resource coming out next spring and maybe use it over the summertime or something like that. That would be a, you know, that would be fantastic. You know, I'm looking forward to the How to Lead When You're Not in Charge, charge for young people, for seniors, and for, you know, teens.
Bookmark, mug, bobblehead, all of that. It's going to be the prayer of Jabez, the 2017 prayer of Jabez.
Nice. That's great.
This is the Unseminary Podcast. Stuff you wish they taught in seminary.
Well, Clay, we're going to jump into the lightning round, that part of the episode where we ask similar questions of everybody that's on the show. It's been such an honor to have you on the episode today. I really appreciate your help. So we're going to talk about just a couple questions. The first one, what's an online resource you're using these days that's helping you in your leadership?
Well, the first thing, when I thought of this, I thought, it's probably not very original, but Evernote has, I feel like Evernote has grown in my life like kudzu. I feel like the more I use it, the more helpful it is. So,
absolutely.
Big fan of Evernote.
Second brain, for sure. What's a book you've read in the last 6 months that's shaping your thinking or ministry?
Oh, this is not shaping my ministry. I'll give you one that is shaping my ministry and one that I've just enjoyed. But I've been reading Questlove's biography.
Interesting. That's cool.
Who's on the Jimmy Fallon show. So I've been a Roots fan since I was in college. And so reading his biography has been kind of interesting. I don't know. It's fun to read. I love biographies. And I like even people like him, because he grew up in a Christian home and definitely doesn't seem like he has much of a faith now. And so I really feel like it helps me get into the mind of people that we're trying to reach.
Totally.
To understand like what repelled him about faith and why is faith not a part of his life now? So anyway, maybe it has actually shaped my ministry more than I thought. And then Tim Elmore, Marching Off the Map, is fantastic for anybody that's working with teenagers, young adults.
Yep.
It is just an excellent resource. I feel like it's fairly new the last couple of months. But
That's cool.
Fantastic read.
What's another ministry that you're looking at, kind of inspiring you? You're watching them, you're tracking them, you know, that you're looking to these days?
Probably most recently Crossroads Church in Cincinnati.
Brian Tone.
I feel like, I met some of their guys recently and I feel like we were speaking some of the same, you know, you talk to someone and they're using language or words that you feel like, oh my goodness, that's how I feel. And, I felt very connected, in regards to some of these digital conversations of how do we take church to people instead of requiring them to come to us? So they're doing some really interesting things around that. And I just like their heartbeat. They're very motivated to reach people, very genuine
they're great folks. I visited there years ago. It was probably 10 years ago. I visited them and because we were looking at some of their stuff they're doing in their facility. And I still remember walking into their team meeting and Brian, their lead pastor, said, "Well, welcome to Cincinnati, the cultural hub of the world," which I thought was funny, you know, just kind of fun. If you could get 15 minutes with any leader alive today, who would that be with and why?
Well, I mean, Tim Cook would be a blast. Gary Vaynerchuk, Gary V. I would love to hear what he has to say. He's kind of a social media,
Absolutely.
Differently kind of guy. I'd probably say those two.
Yeah, that's great. Both amazing. It's funny. I was just actually thinking the other day about Tim Cook and tracking Tim has done an amazing job. And that, you know, that company has continued to thrive post Steve Jobs, right? Like there was this whole, like, is it all going to fall apart? You know, the actual analysts were like, clearly it's not all going to fall apart after Steve Jobs leaves. But there was this popular notion that like Steve Jobs was Apple. But you know, it's actually, if you look at what's happened to their market capitalization post Steve Jobs, it's been incredible, largely due to, you know, obviously the leadership team there led by Tim, which is pretty amazing. Well, I can imagine, you know, being in your role at North Point is incredibly taxing. When you just want to kind of kick back, relax, enjoy life a little bit, you know, what do you do to just have some fun?
Well, we have four kids and we're about to have our fifth in a month. So
great.
The answer should be, I just want to play with our kids. But a kidless answer, because that yes. is usually what I'm doing, is being a dad. But I am a golf. I love playing golf. So mm-hmm. Any chance I get, I try to preach about it as much as possible so that it increases the amount of invites I get from people.
Yeah, people are like, hey, come to my course. Exactly. Right. I'll pay for it. Yeah. It's fine. I'll pay for it. Yeah, nice.
That's right.
Great. Yeah. Well, Clay, I really appreciate you being on the show today. Thank you so much. Yeah. You know, if people want to get in touch with you or find the book, all that sort of thing, you know, what's the best way for them to do that, to track with the church, all of that stuff? What's kind of the best place? Where should they head for that?
I am at Clay Scroggins on Twitter, Instagram, and the website, clayscroggins.com. It's a great place if you sign up this fall. We're sending out a lot of resources for the book, a lot of video interviews that we've done around this topic with Andy Stanley, Louis Giglio, Frank Blake at Home Depot, a couple of Chick-fil-A people. So anyway, that would be great. And Rich, thank you for this podcast. I feel like it is a great resource for the church, and I know you do it out of the goodness and kindness of your heart. So thank you. You're genuinely serving pastors Clay. Myself. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Clay. Have a great day.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com, and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter at Rich Birch, or through email, rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.